You just think we just, you know, whatever happens, we just shit another player. All right, and everything's going to be perfect. All of our fans think that. You all think that. That's what you write about.
Unacceptable in all areas. Unacceptable coaching, unacceptable playing, unacceptable effort. Not what we're about.
You don't want to be here. There's a specific reason. Not really. You know, I think we did a poor job recruiting. If guys are coming in and immediately walking out the door because it was something different than what they thought it would be. We lied to them during recruiting, or we sold them on a dream that wasn't true.
Like I said, coach our kids to do the right thing and you know, play with poise, play with confidence, play with dignity, play with class. At the same time, we're not going to take anyone's shit either.
We want to be a big, fast, dominating, aggressive, relentless football team that nobody in the SEC wants to play.
Now, that's also a second in the West, baby.
Yes, sir.
We're ever getting excited about second. From now on, it's first, okay?
All I want to do is fucking eat. I want you to eat. I want you to eat. I want you to want this shit. Do you want it? Do you want it? Show me.
Bunch of did it again.
Welcome in to the latest episode of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Breton. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter, and I'm joined, as always, by my cousin Shane, who goes by Big Orange Vols on Twitter. What are you up to, you big Tennessee homer?
Hey, buddy, what's going on?
We got a lot going on, Shane, so let's just jump right into it. But before we go around the league, Shane, we found some funny clips. You know, we always like to open with something kind of funny if we can.
Yeah.
And we got some good ones here, Shane, and these are not necessarily SEC related, but old Mike Gundy, his name's always in the SEC rumor mill, it sounds like. So let's start right there, Shane. Let's start with the Oklahoma State coach. And I don't know much of the backstory here, Shane, but I do believe that obviously the super booster there for Oklahoma State, T. Boone Pickens, he passed away recently. So sorry to share that news if you had not heard it yet. But there was a rumor going around that he left Gundy a gift card to go get his hair cut upon his death. And that's what Mike Gundy was asked about here. So if you don't know the backstory, that'll kind of help. But this clip is amazing.
Coach, I know you were joking around Saturday night. I was there about what you think of social media. But was there any truth to those reports that Boone Pickens kind of was joking around and left you a gift card for a haircut? Joking with you, that's all.
Don't hurt the real journalism world. It's jackasses like you that cause problems, okay? They shouldn't even let you call in. Do you want to talk football? We'll talk football. If you want to be out there and talk idiotic social media, then you need to go do something with a college kid.
Okay, thank you.
You bet.
All right, Shane. So Mike Gundy's got no respect for these types of questions. I thought it was pretty funny, but I mean, I kind of understand why maybe he's being such a hard ass, but at the same time, I just thought this was great.
I'm a man. I'm 50, you know? He's what was that? They said that happened, what, 13 years ago? Something like that.
12 years ago Sunday. And this call, I think, was on Monday. So it was almost to the day of his famous rant, which is pretty weird. It's been over a decade, and he's not calmed down one damn bit.
Kudos to Gundy for sticking around that long. I mean, think about it. Coaches don't last more than 10 years, man.
Yeah, that's a good point, Shane. Maybe he ought to ease up, though, if he's going to be around for another decade.
Yeah, old Boone ain't around to save his job anymore.
And one last note here, Shane. Again, this is not necessarily SEC related, although Northwestern's kind of purple Vandy, if you think about it. Mm-hmm. And old Northwestern coach here, Shane, he was asked to, someone's being critical of his play calling, and he let everybody know where you can address those complaints.
We need to execute, and we need to get our players to play cleaner. Does that mean that you're satisfied with the offensive game plan the way it is, and you guys just need to execute that game plan better?
Well, we just take 90 hours and play Wii and golf all week. I mean, yeah, I mean, what do you think? Yeah, I go in every game plan expecting it to work, to be quite honest with you. I understand there's 40,000 experts on Twitter that can call plays for me, so my email address is hashtag I don't care. Okay, so shoot that out. We got to be better.
All right, this guy's a football guy, Shane. He does not know how Twitter, email, none of that works, clearly, by his response here. I just thought this was pretty great.
Dude, this is the theme, man. There were some fired up coaches this week, and honestly, some very depressing coaches. Even Nick Saban, undefeated, was depressing. So if you're listening to this early in the morning, I hope you've had your coffee, because you got a show coming to you, buddy.
Well, Shane, you teased it there, but before we go around the league, I wanted to make this quick note for anybody that missed it on Monday. The SEC announced the Week 6 kickoff and TV schedules. Obviously, we're still in Week 5, but they like to do these 2 weeks out, essentially. 2 weekends mm-hmm. out, I should say. So let's just run down this real quick. And much like the Week 5 slate, we got a couple teams on bye, so there's not a ton of games here. But let's just go in order of the kickoffs, and we'll start with Utah State at LSU. That's going to be the only noon game for Week 6, and that's going to be on mm-hmm. SEC Network. Then we got the CBS game, Shane. So this is the big game. Auburn at Florida, 3:30 Eastern on CBS. That'll be a hell of a game.
Oh, yeah.
Troy at Missouri. That's going to be a 4 o'clock Eastern on SEC Network. Then we got two SEC night games here. Georgia at Tennessee, Shane, 7 o'clock Eastern on ESPN. That's an interesting choice, but there's just not much to pick from this week. And then last game on the docket, Vanderbilt at Ole Miss, 7:30 Eastern time on SEC Network. So, Shane, any thoughts there? LSU getting a noon kick, that's pretty weird. They usually kick off at night.
Yeah.
Auburn, Florida, CBS, and then, of course, Georgia, Tennessee, the night game. What are your thoughts on that slate?
I think, honestly, last year LSU, it wouldn't surprise me if it was a noon game, but this year's LSU, I thought they may want to move it up later in the day just because it is an exciting offense to watch. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of people talking about Joe, you know, so the Heisman train, I don't know if they got any like fancy words they're using down there to make it sound like a Heisman. You know, like Heisman had his thing. They got anything going for Joe?
I don't think so. I think LSU's at the point where they don't need it. Everybody just knows that Joe Burrow's in it with all these passing figures he keeps putting up.
Yeah, we're still going to have to come up with something. But Troy, I think Troy's had more SEC games than any of the SEC teams by this point, right? It feels like they're on every Saturday, man. I've seen enough of Troy. But I am excited about that. That 3:30 Florida-Auburn game, man, that's going to be dynamite.
Yeah, there's an outstanding chance. Certainly Florida's playing Towson, so they're going to be undefeated. And then if Auburn survives at home this week against Mississippi State, they will also be undefeated. So but that's an if there, but that could be a really great game.
You know, it's just because I'm seeing all these articles talking about just how dominant the West is. Mm-hmm. I think this game, I was hoping that the Mississippi State-Kentucky game would give us a little better feel. But I don't think they were in it. I don't think Kentucky was in that game. But Florida, Auburn, if they're undefeated at this game, we're going to find out just how far apart the East and West are.
Mm-hmm. All right, Chance. So we got a lot of action to get into. We got a couple SEC games. So you ready to go around the league?
Let's do it.
Now let's go around the league. Around the league.
We haven't decided how we're going to play the guys, so, and I wouldn't tell you if I did. So, you know, I don't mind you asking a question, but I don't need to answer it.
No, I mean, I'll be whistling Rocky Top by the end of the week, all our play. I mean, it's just like, right? I mean, you just hear it over and over, and, you know, like every other or every third song, it'll roll through within the crowd noise that we play at practice, so you just you get used to it. And it's a catchy tune, right? I mean,
this game's going to be a street fight. This game's going to be a street fight. I mean, some of you guys don't know who Kimbo Slice is. Hopefully you do. And you go back to it, man, this isn't a sanctioned fight. This is a street fight. I mean, this is the SEC. So, man, it's time. It's time to put on the hard hat. Launch bail. Let's get to work.
All right, Shane, let's start here with the game that I think is kind of the most intriguing on the Week 5 slate. And that's, of course, Mississippi State traveling to Auburn.
War damn eagle.
Gus Malzahn met with the media here on Tuesday. And remember, Shane, if you recall last season, this is a game where Mississippi State, you know, they started out slow in SEC, lost to Kentucky, lost that really rough game to Florida and Dan Mullen. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people were ready to write them off, but I thought the best win that they had last year was against Auburn. And this was a game where I'm trying to think back how it played out. But basically, all I remember was Nick Fitzgerald. It seemed like he ran the ball 45 times for about 200 yards. I mean, that was basically their offense, and they couldn't stop it. And the defense there from Mississippi State shut them down, and it was a big win. That was probably Joe Moorhead's best win at Mississippi State, unless you want to count their dominant Egg Bowl performance. I know that obviously that game carries a lot of weight, but that's something I think is going to be sitting on Auburn's mind all week, and that's something that Gus Malzahn hit on here, Shane, on being embarrassed by Mississippi State. And I also wanted to add a couple more notes here talking about how they get Bo Nix prepared for the SEC play. Everybody's been obviously impressed with Bo Nix.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, Gus Malzahn got a little pissed off when he was asked about his team buying into the hype now that they've started off 4-0.
Yeah, all right. You know, the great thing about us is we got most of our guys back. So you really don't have to say anything. They know exactly what happened. We left that thing, and they embarrassed us. I mean, as a team now, it was the whole deal. We only rushed for 90 yards. You know, we pride ourselves, you know, on that, winning up front. So you just got to do it. I mean, they're a good team, and I don't have to say much. I mean, our guys know. It's a new year. It's a completely new year. But at the same time, when you have experiences, whether you're a player or a coach, you remember them. And we got to respond. Yeah, you got to be a little more patient because you got to understand they're still learning. You got to kind of put yourself in their shoes a little bit that, man, if you just – they got to be confident. There's that fine line between, you know, making sure that, you know, they're ready, when to get on them, when not. But more than anything, I think, for a true freshman is who's ever the play caller or the coordinator, you got to have great relationships. And they need to make sure that you know you're with them. Right, and that you got their back. I think that's the number one thing for a young quarterback, just to know that, you know, we're with you. And, yes, you're going to make some mistakes. So what? Don't make the same mistake twice. We believe in you. And that's really, you know, what we've tried to do so far. Didn't say concentrated on that. Yeah. Hey, we're pretty isolated. I told them we're not worried about any kind of talk like that until you get to the end of November. Because that's all that matters. Right now, it don't make any difference. You look every year, you get teams that are hot early, and then they fizzle out. It makes zero. All that matters is Mississippi State. So we'll let it take care of itself. We could care less about what people's opinions are. We could care less about Final Four. We care about Mississippi State. And it's as simple as that. And if you let crap like that distract you, then it hurts you. So I don't think we'll have any problem with that.
All right, Shane, so I really wanted to include this clip about Mississippi State and on the team getting ahead of itself.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've kind of seen that from Auburn. Remember, obviously, the big win against Oregon. And then the next weekend, we both cautioned fans to not expect too much. And I think Auburn kind of came down to earth a little bit. So we've kind of seen them kind of, you know, ride the wave of momentum, I guess if you want to call it. But Gus Malzahn is right here. Mississippi State is not a team that you can sleep on. You sleep on them. Kylin Hill and their crew, I mean, they'll punch you right in the mouth. They'll beat you.
Absolutely. And I think, honestly, it's night and day from week one. I think they came out, they were excited about that win against Oregon. I think he even mentioned championships a couple of times in his conferences. And now, you know, they, like you said, they kind of came back down to earth and realized that, hey, this is a schedule that you're going to have to play week to week. The end product will be there if you keep competitive and you play week to week. I think that's important, especially with this ball club, with a young quarterback like Bo Nix. Just focus on one team at a time. And when you get to the end of the season, it'll be there if it's deserved.
Mm-hmm. Now let's flip over to the other side, Shane. Let's jump on down to Starkville, where Joe Moorhead met with the media here on Monday. And, you know, the big story down there, Tommy Stevens, Garrett Schrader. What's the status of Tommy Stevens? Garrett Schrader's coming off his best ever college performance. Obviously, you know, we've not seen a ton of him, but the improvements he made from Kansas State game to last week against Kentucky was monumental. So let's start with that. Let's just go to Joe Moorhead on that, and on if Schrader's performance kind of allows them to rest Tommy Stevens if he needs it.
Coach, with Tommy and his situation, obviously you're watching him closely this week, but is there a certain point during the week where you make that call, like you said last week, and is it up, would it be Schrader again if Tommy's not able to go?
Yeah, I mean, I wish, and I'm not trying to be evasive with the answers, but it is a fluid situation. And I know I mentioned last week on Monday at that point he was better than he was a week before, but what I didn't clarify was it was a different mechanism. You know, I mean, it was still an upper body injury, but it was something a little bit different than he had the week before. And as the week went on, he just, you know, he wasn't able to go with it. So, you know, we're anticipating him, you know, coming back to practice on Tuesday, and, you know, we just have to see, you know, where it goes. But, yeah, if Tommy's not able to go, then Garrett will be the starter.
I think Joel sort of asked this question post-game, but with how well Garrett has played when he's come in, how much does that change how you treat Tommy's shoulder, especially given the bye weeks coming up after this game? You could probably give him a little extra time to recover.
That's a good question. It was a good question by you too, Joel, before. Yeah, I think it's all contingent upon, you know, where Tommy's at and how healthy he is, and you know, what we need the quarterback position to do to win this game and be 1-0 this week. So, as always, we want to do what's best for the team first, but also be mindful of the individual as well. And, you know, we'll do that in this case.
All right, Shane. So I think this is particularly interesting this week. I know you're on record saying that Schrader, they should basically turn it over to him. Mm-hmm. And I think Stevens, if he's good to go, you got to play him. If you want to ask how to read Joe Moorhead, I have no clue, because he's kind of been all over the place with these decisions under center. And so I have no idea what they're going to do. But it certainly sounds like he doesn't want Auburn to know what they're doing either.
Yeah. What time is this game? Just curious.
This game, Shane, is 7 o'clock Eastern time, 6 o'clock Central, okay, on ESPN.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. Don't get me wrong. I like the bearded Schrader. I think that he's the future. I think we keep him in there. He looked great last week. Let's just build off of that. But there's a big difference between a hungover Kentucky and an Auburn team that's, you know, on a mission. So, and now you're at 7 o'clock. This is prime time. So this is when I think the freshman comes out, and that's what concerns me with Schrader. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of with you. Tommy's been in some big games. Don't forget, you know, he was at Penn State and he played a lot up there. Maybe it wasn't at quarterback, but he was. Now it's a party, Mike. you know what I'm saying? So he's been in big games, big moments. I think you would want to run with Tommy, but seeing what you saw from Schrader this week, there's no need to rush him. And you could kind of tell it that was Joe's thought process. He was almost surprised by that question, like, yeah, that's exactly what we're going to do, you know. So I think they're going to test him, you know, sometime Wednesday, Thursday, see how he's feeling. And if he's not 100%, he's not playing, man. They're going to roll with the bearded Schrader.
Yeah, and imagine, I'm not saying anyone's down on Mississippi State. You know, they're undefeated in league play. We've got to remember that. Yep. Yes, they lost to Kansas State. That was not particularly a good loss, it looked like, at the time. Kansas State's now ranked, so that looks a little bit better. But I don't think there's anyone out there saying, you know, Mississippi State can win the West right now. But that's with the assumption that no one knows what this Garrett Schrader can do. And right. I'm not saying he's going to come out and win them the West this year. But if he is that next breakout candidate under center, I think that, I mean, who knows? That Mississippi State becomes even more of a wild card. You know, like I said, when he went from Kansas State performance, I didn't think he was that good, to last week against Kentucky. I mean, it was night and day. And imagine if he takes that same step this week against an even better defense. Mm-hmm. That may be the difference between Mississippi State coming away with a road win against a top 10 team. So that's something that Joe Moorhead's got to be weighing all week. It was going to be very interesting to see. But that's not all the Moorhead comments we have here, Shane. I also wanted to include these because he was asked about facing Bo Nix, who obviously he's only got 4 games of film on, in this Auburn offense, kind of what they like to do. And then on Mississippi State's success last year against this Auburn defense and what, if anything, that helps for the coming matchup.
Coach, you mentioned having recruited Bo a little bit, but obviously what is the challenge?
Bo
Nix. Yeah. What is the challenge of facing a freshman quarterback when you know you only really have 4 weeks worth of tape on him? I guess how much does that change things?
Yeah, four weeks is a good amount, but I think you know, like I said, having recruited both and kind of tracked his high school career and seeing what he's done so far, I think he and Garrett kind of both have some of that it factor. We're a little bit mature beyond their years, and obviously, you know, Bo being coached by his dad in high school, and his dad was a great quarterback at Auburn, kind of has some of that savvy that you don't see in a lot of true freshmen. So I think part of it obviously is his talent and ability to beat you with his arm and his legs, but some of that experience beyond his years is the other thing. Very, very, very competitive. And you know, you watch the end of that Oregon game. I mean, he was cool as the other side of the pillow. I mean, he was just kind of unflappable.
Coach, you mentioned Bo Nix being a different player for them. What are they doing maybe different offensively with a new quarterback than maybe they didn't do a year ago?
I think relying a little bit more on – I think the, you know, kind of the foundation of the scheme is the same. You know, they're going to, you know, formation you, motion you, you know, have some plays where they sugar huddle and run a play, and a lot of those are trick plays or – you know, they get to the line really fast and try to create eye violations with max pros and shots down the field. But I think the thing where, you know, Bo's a little bit different than the Stidham kid is, I think Bo's a little bit, you know, a little more of a threat with his legs. I mean, Stidham could do it, but he was more of a traditional pocket-style passer, which is, you know, why he's playing in the NFL now. But I think Bo poses more of a threat with his feet. So you're seeing a little bit more of that in the run game.
Last season, this game was possibly your most successful from a running standpoint. You rushed for nearly 400 yards against Auburn. What did you see last year from them defensively that made that possible? And do you see some of those similar traits this season?
I'm just as nervous going to this one as I was last one. But, you know, I just see a big, strong, physical, athletic front seven. You got to find ways to run the ball on them successfully. And, you know, we were very fortunate to be able to do that. Between Nick, who I think was close to 200, I think he had 195, and then Aries and Kylan both combined for kind of in the 150 range. So we were just fortunate to be able to, you know, do some things to keep them off balance and maybe, you know, a little bit more misdirection than we have normally done. But, yeah, you're not going to just line up and you know, run the ball downhill with these guys. It doesn't work that way. So we're going to have to find, you know, creative ways to create you know, create space and angles.
All right, Shane. So I thought it was pretty interesting. Moorhead asked about Bo Nix, and he quickly said, essentially, it's the same deal with them for Garrett Schrader. So that tells me he's got a ton of confidence in this kid. And also, Joe Moorhead talked about how nervous he is going into this matchup as he was last year. So I think that's just kind of the grind of the SEC. He's fully aware of it now that – you can have success 1 year, but next year it's going to be just as hard, if not harder.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be really interested to see. Obviously, he saw something in this Kevin Steele defense. It was a good unit last year. Let's not say it was a bad unit, but he figured something out. And if he's got that edge again, I don't know. I think this could be – that's kind of why I wanted to start with this game. I think this could be one of the best games of the weekend here. It might be a little bit under the radar in the SEC.
I mean, is Hill still the leading rusher in the SEC?
He is.
Yeah, I mean, here you got the king of the SEC right now going against, honestly, the best front that you're going to see in college football. So it is going to be a battle of Goliaths here. So how does – but I just don't think – I think Coach is smart enough not to just run right at him. So, I mean, they're going to have to do something in the air and – that's why I'm leaning a little more toward Tommy. Not that Schrader can't do it, but if Schrader does come out, I hope, man, they just start spreading the ball all around him, because Auburn's going to think that they're going to do the same thing that Nick did last year on him.
Right. No, that's a good point, Shane. It's something I hadn't thought of. All right, Shane, let's jump to the SEC East, where this game is not going to make much waves nationally, but it's certainly a crossroads game for each of these programs, I think. And let's start with the, I don't know if the seat, how hot it is, but the perception is it's boiling hot, Shane. Let's go to Columbia, where old Will Muschamp met with the media here on Tuesday. And we got to start by saying this, Shane. This was, I don't want to say a stunner, but This was very surprising to me. Defensive back Jamias Williams, he's going to become the latest guy that's essentially taken the Kelly Bryant route where he's announced he's going to sit out the rest of the season. He's going to take a red shirt, and he's going to try his luck elsewhere. This was, from what I recall, one of the biggest recruiting wins Muschamp had early in his South Carolina tenure. He beat out Georgia mm-hmm. for this kid, reached into the state of Georgia to beat Kirby Smart for one of the nation's top defensive backs. And due to a combination of things, including injuries, it just never worked out for Jamias. And when you're a disappointing 1-3 and you're sitting there and, I don't know, you got guys kind of already taking this route, it's not a good look here for Will Muschamp.
Will, with Jam deciding to leave, how does the secondary reshuffle? I mean, it's a man down, but how do you guys handle that loss?
No different than we have before. We'll be fine.
Was his decision to leave a surprise to you?
No, he just wants another opportunity. Want a better another situation. So we support him 100%. Love coaching Jam, but we're moving forward.
All right, Chad. So I don't know what – kind of like I said there, I mean, how – is this a terrible look for Muschamp, or what's your thoughts on it?
I think it's perception, man. You know, South Carolina can't afford transfer portals right now. You know,
right.
even if the kid's not going to be a competitor on the team, it's just a bad look. And media likes to make little things like this into a big story. When they you know, people click on articles that say why Muschamp should get fired. So right. the media comes out and they're just making all this. These bullshit articles to get ever it's clickbait. That's all this is. And so now we got somebody hitting the portal. There's going to be 10 more articles written on why this is not a good fit or a good look for Muschamp. They've got people out there, boosters out there, getting a committee together to look. I mean, because it sells articles. That's all this is, you know. And the one thing that fixes what South Carolina is dealing with right now, and they're fully capable of, is winning, man. They've got 2 weeks to prepare for Kentucky. Dude, there's no bye week. You have got to just focus on Kentucky. So 2 weeks, just one team, and a team you haven't beaten a long time. So you come out and you do that, then the media starts shutting up.
I heard Fulmer may replace Will Muschamp. You hear that, Shane?
Oh, God, it wouldn't surprise me. That probably came from Knoxville News Sentinel, man. They just can't wait to bury that our university.
Well, sticking with South Carolina, Shane, also Bill Muschamp, I mean, if nothing else, he's turned into a damn quote machine for us. I really want him to stick around if for nothing other than that. but he was asked a number of things here, some very pointed questions, I thought, here on a Tuesday. Considering they're only a month into the season here, he's facing some tough questions, including has he just considered changing play callers on the offensive side? On why the defensive backs continue to struggle, and finally, this is the best one, on whether this Kentucky game is a must-win for the Gamecocks.
Is changing play callers something you've ever considered on offense?
No.
Is it something you would consider during a season, or are you a believer in – do you ever think there's value in change for change's sake in something like that to shake things up?
No, I mean, we're going to make decisions what's best for our football team.
When your background as the head coach is in a specific position area, do you find your eye naturally going there more? Do you deal with that group more than you deal with other groups? How does that work?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I coach on defense, and I meet with the defense and game plan. And obviously, as far as planning to win the game, we meet as a staff, and we talk about the things we need to do in order to win the game, as well, whether it's in all three phases of offense, defense, and special teams. But certainly, I spend more time with the defense.
The defensive back specifically?
Sure.
So when they're struggling, is that more frustrating for you because that is your area and that's where your background is?
Yeah. I mean, you know, are you trying to punish me or what?
No, I'm just wondering how it works. Do you get
it
more involved?
Me off.
Right. Do you find yourself getting more involved in that scenario?
Always involved. So it's not a situation where all of a sudden you want to start getting involved. I've been involved the whole time, and I take a lot of the burden on myself.
Well, with the 1-3 start and five straight losses to Kentucky, how much pressure is on this coaching staff right now to win this game Saturday?
We have pressure every single week. Every single week, there's a lot of pressure. And you know what? There's more pressure internally than there is externally. I can assure you of that.
Do you consider this a must-win game Saturday?
They're all must-win games. every single game. You know what next week's going to be? Well, it's where we're open. The next week's going to be must win. And we need to kick Open's ass, too.
Ain't you heard, Shane? They're all must-win games, damn it.
Right when he asked the question, I knew the answer to that one. I was like, here it comes. Everyone's a must-win. There's no acceptable loss. You know what I'm saying? You don't think like that. This is a competitive sport. Everybody, there's a winner and there's a loser, and there's no good losers. It's just losers, you know?
Right. Yeah, so, I mean, you see some of the passion, I guess you want to say, from Muschamp, and just, you know, he's aggravated from having to answer these questions, but
yeah,
he's being professional, and he knows they're coming, basically, I think, just based on the fact, because, you know, these coaches talk about, you know, being in the bunker. I'm sure they're not on Twitter reading. I hope to God they're not, but I'm sure they hear it around town and all the radio or what have you. They know people are upset, and this is kind of comes with the territory in the SEC if you don't get it done. I don't know. I know. Remember, I was the guy saying South Carolina could win 10 games this year. So this is clearly a surprise to me that they're 1-3. Yeah. Definitely shouldn't be 1-3. But I'm not ready to say, let's just pull the plug and fire everybody. And
no,
I mean, that South Carolina, or excuse me, the Missouri game, Shane, we keep talking about it. If not for, you know, the Helinski double pass play, there's you 7 points. The pick six, if that goes the other way, I mean, South Carolina, that's a touchdown for them minus a touchdown for Missouri. I mean, you're right in this game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, I don't know. It's not like you're out here getting Jeremy Pruitt 31-34-3. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
I understand why people are pissed off. They want to see W's. They want to see results. But I don't know. I'm just not ready to say this is, you know, this team's going nowhere.
And I'm telling you, Muschamp kind of did this to himself, you know. Being all giddy in the offseason with the media gets them in the bubble. They're not afraid to ask those tough questions now, you know. You go down there in Tuscaloosa, there ain't nobody asking Nick that question, you know what I'm saying, because they're afraid they're going to get their head bit off. So this fiery Muschamp should have stayed fiery all summer long, but, you know, he kind of did this thing to himself.
All right, Shane, so let's flip over to the other side of this one. Let's jump to Lexington. Where this is arguably just as big a game here for Mark Stoops, not for his coaching tenure, obviously. He's safe as you can be at Kentucky. But for this team, I mean, this is something that I hit on heading into this Florida game, Shane. I said if they lose to Florida, Mississippi State, that's not going to be easy. They obviously dropped that one. This South Carolina, if they still got any respect for their head coach, they're going to give everything they have for him because they know how important it is to him and potentially his job there. If they drop his South Carolina game, Shane, yes, they play Arkansas in 2 weeks after a bye, but then they play Georgia and Missouri. I mean, we're looking at a downward. Imagine if they somehow find a way to lose to Arkansas. Certainly, I don't expect that, but, I mean, if you're losing three in a row, dropping the fourth and looking ahead to the next two, this game is huge for Kentucky. If we've already seen it, they kind of, I don't want to say they gave up in that last game, but I think the fact that it started with the pick six, that was just so deflating. They really need to bounce back here against the Gamecocks.
Yeah, they're in uncharted waters, man. It could go either way. This is something you said going into the Florida game that you could easily see this team go on a downward spiral, and that's kind of what they're doing. But like you said, they've got time to got it regroup. Is this game at home?
This one's in Columbia, South Carolina.
Shit. So yeah, I mean, your back's against the wall, boys. I mean, but that's where, I mean, this team, if they've got leadership, which, you know, even though I'm not a fan of Cash right now, he is a leader of that team. If they could get some leadership going and get these boys rebound and just focus, you know, forget the big picture now. All right. So let's focus one game at a time, just like South Carolina. This is a pivotal game, man.
Well, speaking of Mark Stoops and this Kentucky squad, Shane, let's jump on over to what Mark Stoops had to say this week leading up to this game. And, you know, he got a little heated himself here. It was kind of similar to Muschamp. Once again, he's not feeling the heat, But I don't think he appreciates these questions on the fact that, you know, will his fan base still be with him now that they've suffered these two defeats? And a little comical here, talking about the fact that Kentucky threw the ball 42 times in their last game, and of course, they got blown out.
Game invested. Where are they going to go? Come on. We've won a lot of football games around here. I thought we were over that. I mean, I'm disappointed. We accept the criticism, and we're all in this together. And it's not okay with us either. You know, we as a program and an organization, need to get, you know, find ways, find answers, and that's what we do. Go back to work. That's a good football team on the road, and with a young team that didn't play our best. But I that kind of talk seems a little crazy to me. You know, I'd like people. No offense to everybody in this industry here today, but people like to panic. We don't necessarily panic in our building. We just go back to work and continue to get better.
You threw it 41 times, I think, and that's
42.
Probably the most since you've been here.
Was that? Yeah. What did it get us?
Was that?
Wants to see the ball thrown 42 times. Well, you did. Hope you're happy.
All right, Shane. So if you didn't hear it quite clear there, Stoops talking about the fact they threw it 42 times against Mississippi State. And we all saw what happened there. I mean, that's just not Kentucky style of play, whether the fans want that to be or not. Thoughts on what Stoops had to say. And I should note this. We don't have this clip, Shane. But I just thought it was funny. I shared this online, and South Carolina fans got pretty pissed off at me. But Stoops noted that South Carolina, the best 1-3 team in the nation.
Somebody's a fan of the podcast, Mike. You know, because I've been saying it. But I don't know, man. Is there any other 1-3 teams that you'd give a running right now?
How about your Vols, Shane?
Yeah, no, they're better. They got a quarterback at least, so he's a little banged up. I'd take a banged up freshman Holinsky than I would a junior Garantano, or Tano, however he goes by his name anymore. Yeah, Kentucky's got to get back to Kentucky ball, man, and it is not throwing. It's running the ball. They got to get Cavassier going. They've got to get Rose going. They got to take pressure off that quarterback. He is going to be good when the run game is good. If you know, I get it. 40-something attempts. I don't think that was planned. That was kind of a result to where they were.
Right.
But you know, they should not be. This quarterback should not. Smith shouldn't be throwing 40 times, 20 times max. You know.
Well, you just made me realize something though, Shane. Because I agree with everything you just said, but the fact that South Carolina has been having so many issues defending the pass.
Excuse me.
And Kentucky's got a banged up quarterback. Sawyer Smith looks, I mean, he got banged up in that Kentucky game, had to leave this Mississippi State game. He did return to the game, so it's not like he's out or anything, but it's just, I mean, you got to lean on your strength, I suppose, especially on the road. But I don't know if that's wise going to this South Carolina game. So this one could be trouble for Kentucky, although on the other end, if something goes wrong for South Carolina early, I mean, they could cave too, you know what?
Yeah, let me ask you, on the South Carolina side, I saw Shaq pull up a few times. Is he okay? Have you heard anything about him health-wise?
As far as they have not yet ruled him out. I know, like you said, he was pretty limited last week. So, but as far as I've heard, he's good to go.
Him and Edwards against his secondary, buddy? I'm telling you what.
All right, Shane, so let's jump back to the SEC West because we got a couple matchups there. But let's start here with Alabama.
Roll Tide!
Where Nick Saban met with the media here recently. They're hosting Ole Miss. And, yes, I know Ole Miss has dropped two games here, Shane, but, hell, they're still undefeated in conference play too. So, you know, you can't rule out anything here. I know, obviously, I don't know if you've seen this, Shane, but I don't know if this is true or not, but I saw it on Twitter, so you never know. But Alabama, 35.5 point favorites here over Ole Miss. And apparently Ole Miss has never been an underdog of this large in an SEC game. So that would be pretty interesting if true. But I kind of see where they're getting that from, Shane, because just these receivers against Ole Miss's defensive backs, where the defensive backs look pretty solid, but hell, Shane, Cal, I mean, was just ripping the secondary apart last week, and they got no one like they got on Alabama. So let's jump over here to Nick Saban, who was asked about his receivers and getting these guys going. And he also had an interesting comment, Shane, for Deonte Brown, who you may recall late last season, Shane, this is a guy that I can't remember exactly what happened here. I think he tested positive for some kind of PEDs or something. Mm-hmm. And he was suspended, mandatory suspension for 6 games. So he sat out the last two of last season, and he just sat out the first 4 of this season. But he's technically back from that. And Nick Saban, based on his comments here, Brown's got nothing guaranteed to him.
Turn your volume down, because Saban is super excited.
With Deonte Brown now eligible to play for you guys, what's the plan for him this week and just moving forward?
Well, the plan for every player on our team is guy's got to beat somebody out if he wants to play. I mean, nobody's entitled to play. I mean, so, you know, he gets in shape. He does what he's supposed to do. He shows that he can play better than somebody else that's playing. That's the plan, just like it's the plan for every other guy on the team. So, and that's really kind of up to him, not up to me.
How much of a spark does Henry Ruggs provide early in games, and do you try to get him involved more early in games?
Well, I think that we like to get all our guys involved early in the games. I think that, you know, some of the plays that these guys make, I know you all look at it like, okay, we put this play in so we could throw the ball to this guy, but you throw the ball to the guy relative to what the defense does. So, one of the plays that he scored on early in the game was a double pattern, which was kind of a setup play for him. But the other play was an RPO. We could have just as easily handed the ball off as throwing it to him relative to what the defense did. So I think, you know, our receiver core in general, ability to catch and run with the ball, including Henry Ruggs, is, you know, one of the assets that we have on our team. So, you know, we want all those guys to get featured the best we can.
All right, Shane. So Deonte Brown's got to earn everything that's been given to him. I think that's the right approach, obviously. But kicking over back to these receiver comments here. Yeah, Henry Ruggs. I mean, it just seems like every game they open, if it's there, I mean, they're getting it to him, and he's going about 75 yards in about 6 seconds. I have no idea how Ole Miss is going to slow this guy or any of these receivers down this week.
Let me ask you, in a race from one end zone to the other, do you think Ruggs or do you think Schwartz would win?
I would have to go with Schwartz, just because, I mean, I don't know if Ruggs does track, but I know Schwartz is in consideration for the next Olympics. Like he's legitimately going to at least attempt it. And not to say Ruggs can. Hell, he seems like he could, but track speed is one thing, football speed is another. So I think it'd be damn close, Shane, but I give it just a slight edge to Schwartz.
Follow-up question. Can either one of those two beat Judy in a cone drill?
I don't think so, Jerry Judy. I think I got to give it to him on that one.
Okay, I was just curious.
One more thing on Alabama, Shane. I do want to make this note. We didn't make it on Sunday. We had such a loaded show. I didn't have time to get to it. But it was interesting because Nick Saban was asked about his quarterback recruiting. And, of course, he cannot be specifically asked about recruits until they sign their letter of intent. So he was not asked specifically about this kid. But if you missed the news, Alabama flipped USC, that Southern Cal, five-star quarterback Bryce Young. He's the nation's number 4 overall prospect. And this is a kid that comes from a high school. I know we do have some fans in Southern California. We love those fans, but the fans from South do not know of the school Mater Dei, but it's a juggernaut program there in L.A., and it's the likes of Matt Leinart. And remember that blonde-haired USC quarterback? What was his name? Barkley and Mark Sanchez. They all come out of this school. I mean, it's like a factory for elite quarterbacks, and they all go to USC. This kid was going to go to USC. Now he's flipped to Bama. It's probably going to be Tua's replacement here. And Nick Saban asked about the importance of recruiting quarterbacks every year. And obviously, you know, he's talking about Bryce Young, but he can't say Bryce Young. So just wanted to include this clip. I thought Alabama fans would appreciate it.
What's the importance of signing a quarterback every year in the overall scheme of recruiting?
I think the importance is to sign a good quarterback. That's probably most important, not just a quarterback. Because I think, you know, those guys, and I think it's more apparent in college football now than it's ever been, the teams that have a legitimate chance to have a really good season, most of them have really pretty good quarterbacks. It doesn't mean that just because you have a good quarterback that you're going to have a good season. You got to have good players to play around them. But it certainly helps because that guy distributes the ball to every guy on the team. So his ability to be efficient and effective enhances everybody's chances of being successful. But it's also the most difficult position to play if you don't have good players around you. So it's important to surround a quarterback with other good players, and then everybody has a chance to be successful.
All right, Shane. So I really like what Saban had to say here. Yes, you got to have elite quarterbacks in today's college football. I mean, we've seen – I mean, Alabama, hell, they managed to win a couple titles with – some journeyman quarterbacks, but this offense just taken to another level with when they had an actual quarterback that could really challenge defenses. And that's why he goes after these guys. But it's I particularly like the fact, because we like to try to hammer home the point that these quarterbacks, they're only as good as the players around them. That's why we joke around about the damn parent cam and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But the same thing, that's what Saban's saying here. I mean, this kid could be the next Tua, but if he doesn't have good receivers, he doesn't got good linemen, he's not going to be the next Tua, even if he's better as an individual.
Right. Now, you think that was a knock at USC? You know what I'm saying? Like, hey, we've got the talent. So, you know what I'm saying? Maybe he was in a roundabout way still recruiting. I don't know. But
yeah, that's interesting.
I was just thinking that was kind of funny. And the fact – I think getting a quarterback every year is important, man. Sometimes signing two quarterbacks, you see this a lot, because some of them just don't pan out. Some of them transfer out, you know. So you've got to have that – just that constant rotation, I think, because the last thing you want is a situation like Tua going out and all you got is a true freshman. You know, you want to have some established depth behind Tua that's got some practice, like Mac Jones, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So because if you don't, and then you have that gap, or you kind of got that Georgia situation where, you know, boom, 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 next thing you know, it's Fromm and who, you know, a guy that as a JUCO that left your school, you know what I'm saying? Not right. Saying that he's not good, but I think it's important that you have that, just that revolving quarterback in there every year. Maybe he's good, maybe he's not, but sometimes you're going to find that diamond in the rough too.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's flip over to the other side of this matchup, Shane. Let's go to Oxford.
Auditorio, miss.
Where Matt Luke met with the media here on Monday. And, you know, the big news there, Matt Corral could not finish the Cal game. And here comes true freshman John Reeves Plumlee. And you figure, oh, my God, they're rolling in a freshman here. They're down. What were they down? They were down 15 points, but at that point with about 4.5 minutes in the game. This kid nearly won him the game. I mean, he was I think Corral must have been, you know, hurt the whole game because he was not really playing that well.
Yeah.
And then out comes the freshman. He's just a huge spark. And now it sounds like Matt Corral's day-to-day, but Matt Luke going up against Alabama, sounds like they are going to have both quarterbacks ready to play, and they're planning on playing both of them. I think that's an important note to make, because if Corral's limited at all, you may just want to go with the true freshman Plumlee. I mean, he was that dynamic, and sometimes you just never know what you got in these kids until you put them out there. He looked the part.
That's right.
And finally, this note I think was particularly important on the play of his defensive backs, because they're going to be front and center after getting kind of toasted against Cal. I mean, they have really got to step it up this week if they're going to handle or at least even limit Alabama.
Matt Corral, you know, just after further evaluation, he's going to be day-to-day. He has bruised ribs. He was out there yesterday, didn't do a whole bunch. He'll be out there tomorrow, and I'll know more at practice tomorrow, but he'll be day-to-day moving forward.
Matt, you came in the season with little experience in that room anyway, in the quarterback room, and you kind of alluded to John Rice, but talk about his skill set versus Matt and where he may be in the overall learning curve with the offense and just physically too.
Yeah, and that's one of the positives of having an experienced coordinator like Rich is he's had throwing quarterbacks, he's had running quarterbacks, and the offense is very flexible in how we can utilize him. And there's a lot of things that are built into the offense that we can go to with John Rice where he can showcase his talents and his ability to run the ball. And you saw that in the game on the quarterback draw and on some of the zone read stuff, he can give some guys problems.
How do you go about testing whether Matt's going to be ready? Is it just personal comfort for him, or are there actual tests he's going to need to go through to
see? Just go through a normal practice and see, you know, how he's feeling. And again, he's pretty sore yesterday, feeling a little bit better today, and then, you know, by tomorrow and Wednesday you'll know a little bit more.
On the pass coverage, is it lack of pressure, lack of coverage, combination?
Yeah, it's a combination.
What do you do to fix it?
It's a combination of things. There's a couple times that that they just made a good play. There's a couple times that we're a little bit out of position and not using the proper technique. A couple times we're playing zone and we need a little bit more pressure. So it's a combination of everything. But when you're watching the tape, it is all fixable, and it's one or two third downs that would have changed the game. And it's the same thing offensively. There's a couple things, you know, sometimes we missed an open guy. Sometimes a running back didn't make the right read. One time we missed a block. It's just little things here and there that you have to get cleaned up if you want to win big games.
Matt, how do you handle your quarterback reps this week?
Well, it all based on who's, you know, how Matt progresses and he's healthy. If Matt can't go, then John Rice and Grant will be working in there. And if Matt can go, that will obviously affect it.
When Matt Luke ain't screaming, he's whispering.
That's right. If he ain't losing his voice, he's whispering. That's right, man.
I know the odds are clearly stacked against him. Hell, we just talked about it. I mean, they're a five-touchdown underdog, five-touchdown-plus underdog in this matchup.
Yeah.
I'm trying to spin this, Shane, that Ole Miss kind of fans can get excited about this one. Like I said, they're still undefeated in conference play. It's not like the season's over here. It was funny during Saban's presser, he noted, this is the team we've struggled with the most in SEC play. That was when old Hugh was around. You know, it's been a while, but I don't know, Shane. Maybe if this freshman really does spark him, I mean, we've seen holes in Alabama's defense this year. We've seen Helinski light him up. Any chance? I mean, I think that's kind of the Ole Miss, that's their best chance in this matchup.
If you're going to upset Alabama, man, you've got to keep it simple, and you've got to have that three, even though it's boring, Mike, and I cannot stand watching it, you've got to have one of those 3-4 yard games. You know what I'm saying? Let John, one thing about John, if he's out there, he's lightning fast. So let's take advantage of that. Let's let Alabama know that we're going to run and maybe occasionally pass. So we got to keep them honest. But we're going to win this game 3-4 yards at a time. We're going to drain the clock. We're going to make this a boring game. We're going to try to keep Alabama's defense on the field, which they've been suspect at times. So if you're going to do it, you've got to slow this game down. And I think that's what's going to happen, because if you can do one of those 10-12 yard drives, and then Alabama comes out and Tua wants to throw it. But, you know, sometimes it takes a couple of first downs to get your chemistry going. And if you're 3 and out and you get the ball back and then it's another 3-4 boring drive, that's how Ole Miss has the potential to beat Alabama. Not saying that they're going to, but I think it's got to be a conservative game call.
Yeah, I mean, if history is any indication, Shane, it seems like Alabama's defense, who do they struggle against? Mobile quarterbacks.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, Shane, the other game here in the SEC West, Texas A&M versus Arkansas in Arlington on the neutral field, of course. Both these teams coming off tough losses. Jimbo Fisher's got to get his team ready to go. But the first year last year, a lot of people may not recall this game outside of the fans of these two, but Arkansas really gave them a game here. They had the ball at the end of the game. It was either a chance to win it or tie it. I can't recall. It was one or the other. But, hell, they were marching down the field. They just kind of – they couldn't get it done. But I know these teams – different teams, different year, but this series almost always seems to go in overtime or close to it. So this is one where Texas A&M, if they're on the letdown and Arkansas is, you know, fired up, this could be another matchup here that could be good. And this is something that Jimbo Fisher hit on during his first media availability of the week. And he talked about how he's really going to have to rely on his leaners now, because no one envisioned there at College Station they'd be 2-2 after four games. But that's the reality they're in. And then he was also asked about their struggles in the running game, which I think has been a huge part of them being 2-2 this season.
Coach, when you lose a game, you lose a couple games early, how much are you reliant on the player-to-player leadership and guys leading each other? And who stood out in that regard?
You definitely have to. I mean, because that's the group. You have to learn to bond together. I mean, because, like I say, frustration can set in. Anything can set in. You have that's part of sports. There's good and there's bad, and you got the group inside was, you know, on offense. That's always it's Oz, it's Kellen, a couple of those linemen, Green and Big Dan up front. Usually in that regard, Prater does a good job in that as far as keeping guys together defensively. Buddy Johnson's really evolving into a very, very good leader. He is playing very well, doing some really good things, and, you know, becoming that guy and understanding. Carper does a great job in that regard, some of those other guys. So, I mean, you know, there's a good group. Man, Braden, as your punter now, those guys have tremendous respect for him, and he speaks, and they really listen to him. They have a lot of respect for what he does and how he does it, because they know how hard he works. So there's a good core group of those guys who understand that and understand how we have to just go work and play ball.
So how do you get more out of your running game? Were you making the same mistakes against Clemson and Auburn, or are they different mistakes?
They're not tactical mistakes. They're not missed assignments. We had a couple at Clemson on missed declarations that we worked to the wrong people. But these weren't. We just a couple times we physically got beat. They had a couple good, really good guys up front that really stuffed and played to run. Other times it was whether it was a tight end mashing, staying on it connected. Sometimes it was a back missing a cut. Sometimes and it's reps. And you know, getting these young backs going back again, and because they hadn't had a lot of playing time when Jay Sean had taken a lot of reps, and getting them in there, incorporating what we do, and getting our linemen to consistently try to get more push, get more holes in what we're doing. And we played a very good front, too. At the end of the day, that front there, like I said before, is one of the best fronts we'll play, if not the most physical front we'll play of any time we do. So we just got to keep doing what we do it better, and get more refined at what we do. And you know, if we have to tweak and turn a formation or a scheme or something like that by each individual team we play, we'll do that.
On the run game, how realistic is it to maybe look at the quarterback run as maybe augmenting what you have right now?
Oh, it is. It's a part of it. I mean, it'll always be a part of what we do, and Kellen's very capable of doing that and handling that. And that's part of things that we will evaluate and look at, no doubt.
All right, Shane. So, I mean, this is where we're going to find out what this Jimbo Fisher era is all about, I think, because there's still, you know, there are ways from where they want to be. But Jimbo Fisher was pretty optimistic during this presser, and I'm even starting to see, you know, I'm not trying to bash this guy because I like him and I've had some interactions with him. I don't think he says stuff just to get wild interactions, but I don't know if you saw this, Shane, but Peter Burns of SEC Network, he recommended that a lot of these A&M guys just sit out the season like these Houston kids are planning and just redshirt and come back next year and just be having like an awesome team. But that's wild to me because, I mean, in A&M, in College Station right now, they expect wins.
Yeah.
They've already paid for their tickets. They're showing up on Saturday. You think those people are going to be cool with them, with half the team or whatever, just saying, fuck it, we're already only one game down in the West. I'm not on board with that. And I don't think that A&M is that far off. It's not like, you know, it's not like they got destroyed by Auburn. I just think they got beat by a better team and they didn't execute as well. And if they, you know, if Kellen Mond hits a pass here, or if they, you know, if they hit a run here, I mean, they could have won that game. So,
yeah,
I don't think this is a team that should be looking to 2020. I think there's a lot to accomplish here in 2019. But like Fisher says, it's got to start with these players believing that, because if they don't believe it, it's not going to happen. How important is it for these kids to get their mind right and get back in the SEC play with a big win?
First off, we got to get ahead of this Houston thing. I mean, this is a trend I could see rapidly going. You know what I'm saying? We kind of saw a little bit of it when Clowney decided just to wait for the draft. You know, we kind of got a little nervous then, but you know, seeing these kids in Houston doing this, and now there's talks of kids in Texas A&M doing this. A scholarship is earned, man. And I think if you're manipulating the system so you can come back, I don't know. I'm not a fan of that, and I could see some sort of conversation with the coaches in the off season this coming up year. So,
right.
But as far as
well, and just real quick, I do want to make that note that it's not anyone in A&M thinking about this. Apparently, it's just he suggested it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think he's reporting that he said Kellen Mond should do this. I was like, what?
No.
I don't. So no one at A&M, as long as I'm aware of, has even considered this. He just threw that suggestion out there.
Okay. I was about to break some news, Mike, you know. But the fact of the matter is both these teams are coming off a tough loss. And everything you said about Texas A&M is correct, but you could also say the same thing about Arkansas. It's how do these kids react? You know, I'm worried more about the Arkansas situation because if they just quit, if they're just not in it, then they're like I said, they're not going to win any more games this season. And I don't think that's the case. I think, you know, these kids play football, they're competitors, they're wanting to win. And I think Morse is laying it on thick with the emotions, you know, saying, hey, I'm coaching for my job, my family, and I need you guys to buy in. And, you know, that's a sneaky, dangerous team sometimes. If you've got a team that's excited and working together and they've got a common goal and they're not going to leave anything on the field. And then you got A&M on the other side coming in saying, well, we're 2-2, you know, we're not going to be able to make the playoffs this year. We're not going to compete for the SEC championship. You know, how much letdown are they going to have? And if that's what's scary for A&M fans, because I've seen it on both sides. So it really depends on who's the better coach this week, who rallies this team, gets them ready to play. Because if either one of these teams come out, I don't care which side, if they come out not competing, the other team's going to win, period.
Well, speaking of the coach, Shane, let's jump over to Chad Morris.
Woo pig!
It's a lot of the same stuff here, Shane. He's talking about how unacceptable and how embarrassing this performance was. And I don't know if you saw it, but I'm sure Razorback fans saw that the AD, I mean, he was on a speaking tour this week. And, I mean, he's getting just questioned, just peppered with, hey, is Chad Moore safe? I mean,
yeah.
My God, it's less than 2 years after this guy hired him. This is not what he envisioned. So here's Chad Morris on, again, he's kind of talking about the San Jose State game, on holding everyone accountable in the building and on preparing Nick Starkle to respond after his 5-interception performance going up against his former team.
This is embarrassing.
As I said after the game, Saturday night, and after watching film, our performance was completely unacceptable. We got out-coached in every phase. We got outplayed in every phase. We got out-executed. And it was completely unacceptable and embarrassing. And everyone is being held accountable, and it starts with me. And the only thing we can do is go back to work. And our total focus is on getting this football team prepared and ready today to be able to compete at our standard for this Saturday against Texas A&M.
Yeah, Chad, you said it now, after the game, you're going to hold everybody accountable. Does that mean you might reassign some responsibilities within the staff? Does that mean you play more young guys to push the old guys? Does that mean you're more hands-on with certain aspects of the game planning or position groups? What does that mean, holding everybody more accountable?
Well, I think it's the performance at all levels from everyone. That's what we're talking about, and being able as a coach to get your guys to play at a very high level. That's what I mean holding coaches accountable. And holding players accountable is to get in there and to execute the plan and continue to play and play fast and play hard and take care of their preparation. You know, we get them 20 hours a week. Three of those count as games. And so, you know, the accountability for everybody to make sure that we're not overlooking anything or any aspect of our program or any opponent. And so that's on everybody. It's on myself included, This is a head coach, all the way down to the equipment.
So, Coach, would you say it's like attention to detail that needs to get better, or what is it exactly that you change?
No, I think our attention to detail each and every week is we focus on that. That's the little things in our program that we talk about consistently and constantly. And because it's those little things that, if let slide, lead to big things. So that is, as I mentioned a minute ago, there was nothing in practice that I saw last week that would have led me to believe that our guys were going to, and our coaches, that we were going to come out and not perform at the level that we all felt that what we saw the snapshot in the fourth quarter to look like. There was nothing that led to that.
You also mentioned about Nick and about quarterback and has to play within the system. Just kind of what didn't he do that you wanted him to do as far as within the system?
Yeah, you know, I think me as a coach have got to do a better job of preparing him for exactly what we're asking him to do. And, you know, especially two games into this thing with him. And so that's on me. That's completely on me. It's not on him. And just to be able to give the answers that we want in the opportunity in the time frame that he needs to take them in, and whether that's getting the ball out on the edge in a run, a fade ball on a run situation, letting him know when we expect that, when we don't expect that, and that's not on Nick. That's completely on me.
All right, Shade. So this game, obviously overshadowed by the San Jose State loss. I mean, I thought the talk all week was going to be Arkansas, 3-1, looking to be improved. Nick Starkel, this is going to be the revenge game. Mm-hmm. And now we're talking about this garbage San Jose State. I mean, you kind of hit on it there already with, how this team responds. But I think it's never as simple as just a quarterback, but it kind of is in this game. I mean, if he just doesn't toss the game away and he has a great game up against his former team that kind of passed him over, I think I don't want to say Arkansas is going to win this game, but I really think they can compete in it if that happens.
Dude, the thing that gets me on this clip right here is it's the woe is me attitude. It's the I'm sad, I'm about to cry. You know what I'm saying? We get it. You're coaching for your job. But come out with some balls, man. You know, own it. Move on. Because your players are going to mirror you. And if you're coming out moping around, well, guess what's going to happen Monday when we're practicing? There's going to be a lot of moping around. There's going to be a lot of finger pointing. And there's going to be a lot of blaming going on there in Arkansas. Mm-hmm. You're creating a mess, man. Take ownership. You're head coach now for a Division I SEC football team. Own it. And you go out there, you say, okay, hey, we screwed up, man. Well, okay, we weren't prepared. That one's on me. No one else. You know, you want to blame the defense, you want to blame the offense, you want to blame a quarterback wearing a Justin Bieber shirt. I don't care what you want to blame. This one's on me. I did not take control of this team. This week, I'm going to take control of this team. We're going to come out, and we're going to beat Texas A&M. You know what I'm saying? You're going to get these kids pumped up, because if you're the battle captain and they're all looking up to you and you think that you can win, or at least you're acting like you can win, then they're going to think they can win, and then they're going to go into this game. But if you come out in a press conference with all this media attention and everybody's talking about the AD walking around, talking on a walking tour, you know what I'm saying? I mean, just moping around? Grow a pair, Morris.
Fired up Shane. I love it.
Oh.
Final thing on this game, Shane, I do want to make this quick note here, because obviously the game's in Arlington and there's mixed emotions. Some of these fans love it. Some of them hate it. Both these coaches were asked about it. So I just want to include both these clips. I want to include them back to back. Jimbo gets a little bit more into it than Chad Morris, but I just figured we'd include both of them.
I know every year there's lots of debate and talk about the merits of going up and playing in Arlington. Having done it now, mm-hmm. Is that what's your take on the game, playing it there or as opposed to playing it home and home?
I mean, I love playing here, but I think it's a great thing. I'm not against it. I really am not. I mean, I think that's a great venue to play in. You're in a tremendous venue. You're in an area where a lot of our players come from. It's great for their families to have access to be able to come there. In recruiting, it's easier for recruits to get to a game they can come up there and see us. And again, I also say it, sometimes learning to play in neutral site venues is good for your program because of different scenarios that will occur hopefully in your future.
Chad, the AD at A&M is on record as saying when this contract runs out in 24, they'd rather this series go back campus games. You have any thoughts on that and playing down there and you know, what it means to you and how you'd feel about it if it did go back to campuses?
Well, first of all, we've got a great fan base in the Dallas area. It's a huge part of our recruiting footprint. But that is for a whole nother discussion at a whole nother day. Is my only focus right now is getting this football team ready to go down to Dallas this week and play this Saturday. And all that other stuff can be for down the road discussion.
All right, Shane, I know you're not a huge fan of these neutral site non-conference games, but what are your thoughts on it being a SEC game here that they always have in Arlington?
I still think it's stupid, you know. I mean, let's say I went to Texas A&M.
Mm-hmm.
I want to watch a home game at Texas A&M. If I went to Arkansas and it's my turn, I'm there for 4 years, I want to watch two games in Arkansas, you know.
Right.
It's that's what this is. This is college football. This isn't the pros, all right? As much as everybody likes to show off Jerry's World down there, we want to see some home games because that's where it matters. And then you go to the home games and you wonder where all the fan support is. Well, maybe you shouldn't do these neutral site games, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you should be pumping up your own stadium. But one thing that did stand out in this to me, because we were talking a little bit about, I don't know, I think it was last year, we were talking about the world's largest outdoor cocktail party.
Mm-hmm.
And they were upset about the neutral site game there because they couldn't host recruits. But
right.
he was saying that he likes it because it's easy for the recruits to get to.
Mm-hmm.
So is it that you just can't go to the field, you can't pay for them, but they can be in the stands watching the game? Or
yeah, that's what it is. They're allowed to come, but A&M or Arkansas, they're not allowed to like pay for their tickets. They're not allowed to have them on the sidelines. And they're not allowed to even interact with them. But, you know, they're allowed, obviously, to go to the game, pay their own way and everything. But I think Texas, obviously, is such a huge state. There's A&M and Arkansas fans all over that state. And, mm-hmm. you know, if they're living close to Arlington, this is a great chance every year for them to watch this game. So it's a little bit different dynamic. I see your points, but I also see the benefits of having this game. And I really think that it benefits Arkansas. I know a lot of Razorback fans don't think so, but having that extra game in the state of Texas when that, particularly under Chad Morris, it has to be a huge part of their recruiting. I think it kind of benefits them in that way as well.
Yeah, that's good. At least they could take a picture out there. Did you see that little photo booth they got there in Dallas?
No.
You stand, yeah, they got this little thing. You stand out, you put your money in there, whatever, and then you do your pose. And as you're standing there, like these digital players come out, and it looks like the real players are right beside you,
mm-hmm.
take the picture. So when you get your picture, it honestly looks like the guys were right there. It's crazy. I never seen anything like it. If you ain't seen it, I'll throw it on the Reddit page tomorrow.
All right, Shane, so this has been a little bit of a long one. I do one final note quickly here. We're not going to jump much to the Gators, but I do want to make this note that Pat Dooley of the Gainesville Sun, he was the first one to report this, but the Gators, Shane, they're set to announce a home-and-home series with Utah, and
yeah.
I believe this is going to be 2022-2023. Back, I think it starts in Florida, then it flips to Utah the next season, just a couple years away. But I really like that home-and-home series. I think that'll be a great one. All right, Shane, that's going to do it for us on this edition. And of course, you made it this far. If you wouldn't mind going just a step further, giving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, whatever the hell it's called now, rate and review. That really helps the pod, Shane.
Absolutely.
Thanks again for joining me, as always. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We'll catch you on the next one.
All right, see you guys. Go Vols.
Happy trails to you.
apologize about missing yesterday. My triathlon went a little longer than expected.